Assembled here in this holy place to hear at great length the transcendental message of Godhead and in this way perform sacrifice. Purport. The age of Kali is not at all suitable for self-realization as was Satya Yuga, the Golden Age, or Treta, or Dwapara Yugas, the Silver and Copper Ages. For self-realization, the people in Satya Yuga, living a lifetime of 100,000 years, were able to perform prolonged meditation, and in Treta Yuga, when the duration of life was 10,000 years, self-realization was attained by performance of great sacrifice, and in the Dwapara Yuga, when the duration of life was 1,000 years, self-realization was attained by worship of the Lord. But in the Kali Yuga, the maximum duration of life being 100 years only, and that, combined with various difficulties, the recommended process of self-realization is that of hearing and chanting of the holy name, fame, and pastimes of the Lord. The sages of Nomisarandhya began this process in a place meant specifically for the devotees of the Lord. They prepared themselves to hear the pastimes of the Lord over a period of 1,000 years. By the example of these sages, one should learn that regular hearing and recitation of the Bhagavad Gita is the only way for self-realization. Other attempts are simply a waste of time, for they do not give any tangible results. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preached this system of Bhagavad Dham, and he recommended that all those who were born in India should take the responsibility of broadcasting the messages of Lord Sri Krishna, primarily the message of Bhagavad Gita. And when one is well established in the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita, he can take up the study of Srimad Bhagavatam for further enlightenment and self-realization. So I'm going to read the next verse as well, since it is particularly appropriate for Srila Prabhupada's appearance day, again by the arrangement of Lord Sri Krishna. Tvam na sandarsito tatra dushtaram nistitirishitam akalim sattva haram bhumsam akaranadhara hivandavam. We think that we have met your goodness, Srila Prabhupada, by the will of providence, just so that we may accept you as captain of the ship for those who desire to cross the difficult ocean of Kali, which deteriorates all the good qualities of a human being. Purport. The age of Kali is very dangerous for the human being. Human life is simply meant for self-realization. But due to this dangerous age, men have completely forgotten the aim of life. In this age, the lifespan will gradually decrease. People will gradually lose their memory, finer sentiments, strength, and better qualities. A list of the anomalies for this age is given in the 12th canto of this work, and so this age is very difficult for those who want to utilize this life for self-realization. The people are so busy with sense gratification that they completely forget about self-realization. Out of madness, they frankly say that there is no need for self-realization because they do not realize that this brief life is but a moment in our great journey towards self-realization. The whole system of education is geared to sense gratification, and if a learned man thinks it over, he sees that the children of this age are being intentionally sent to the slaughterhouses of so-called education. Learned men therefore must be cautious of this age, and if they at all want to cross over the dangerous ocean of Kali, they must follow the footsteps of the sages of Naimisharanya and accept Srila Sudha Goswami or his bona fide representatives, such as Srila Prabhupada, as the captain of the ship. This ship is a message of Lord Sri Krishna in the shape of Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we see these two verses here. In the first verse, the sages of Naimisharanya describing how the age of Kali has already begun, and that they are assembled there to perform a great sacrifice of hearing and chanting about the message of Godhead. And the second verse describing this age of Kali, which deteriorates all the good qualities of a human being. So there's a continuation of the very difficult circumstances of the age of Kali. But in this verse, the sages give the this verse and the previous verse, they're saying that by hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, that is the way that one can become free from the influence of this age, attain self-realization, God-realization. But in order to do that properly, they understand that they must be guided by someone who is able to show them the correct way to do that. Therefore, we see that, you know, the sages will ask, they've already asked that question, that, you know, you are the knower of so many different religious scriptures, you please tell us the essence. So they want to hear and chant about the message of Godhead that is there in the Shastras, but they want to hear about the essence, especially in this age of Kali, because one, there is not time to hear the complete knowledge of the Vedas and then to go back and assimilate the essence. The complete expanse of Vedic knowledge is not even available. You know, many parts of just can't get them at all. And apart from that, people have no interest to even hear Shastra. For a few minutes, people are just absorbed in just material life. And even if they stop and hear something about the goal of life from the Shastras, they have no intelligence to understand it. So therefore there's quite a dilemma, and they're asking Sudha Goswami, this is a very, very difficult situation. So therefore we're asking you to, present, we're very fortunate because you are the captain of the ship for those who want to cross over this ocean, so that they can understand that, Sudha Goswami, he is quite capable of taking all of those sages and all living entities across this ocean, very difficult ocean of Kali Yuga. As described here, that processes that were available in other ages, which are, throughout the Vedic literatures, processes meant for Satya Yuga, Dwapara Yuga and Treta Yuga, the Vedic scriptures are filled with information about those processes. The difficulty is you can't follow any of those in this day and age. Therefore they're very feeling very, very fortunate that they've come across Sudha Goswami, because they understand that he's able to deliver the exact remedy for them and for all other living entities in this age of Kali. So, a very nice example, the captain of a ship. We have to, just meditate upon that example, that, if you're out on the ocean, if you're out on the ocean, and of course, one thing is you may not have the ship. Now, when you say that someone is captain of a ship, it assumes they also have a ship. Sudha Goswami is not a captain without a ship. He has a ship, and that ship is the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. So if someone is floating around in the ocean, you just imagine that you've somehow or another somehow found yourself stranded there. Like a foolish person, someone has tried to swim across the ocean by catching the tail of a dog, and you know, instead of reaching the far shore, they've just been carried by the currents helplessly into, you know, very dangerous waters somewhere in the middle of the ocean. So if there's no way that they can swim to the other side, there's no way they even know where the other side is. You know, when you're in the middle of the ocean, you know, there's just waves tossing, you know, you cannot see any direction. You don't even know which is north and south. Very difficult. Sometimes, you know, even the sky, if you can somehow navigate by the stars, you know, the waves are just tossing you this way and that way. You can't even see the sky. If a ship comes along, as Prabhupada said, yesterday we heard that if someone understands that the transcendental nature of Lord Sri Krishna's birth and activities, that is sufficient for liberation. So of course there are different, you know, there are different levels of liberation. You can be officially liberated, and you can be fully liberated, actually. So similarly, if someone is in the ocean and from the ship they throw a life buoy into the ocean, and you just somehow or another, with the last little bit of strength, you know, this last strength of a dying man, you grab hold of that buoy and it enables you to lift your head just an inch above the water, you're saved, you're liberated. So even, you know, from the beginning of one's understanding, even if theoretically they somehow understand that, yes, I don't fully understand Srimad Bhagavatam, but from what the little I have heard, even in the first 5 minutes, I can understand, yes, Krishna appears to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his birth. His birth is transcendental. His activities are stated to be transcendental. All the sages have accepted this. You know, this is stated in the scriptures. I can see that. I don't fully understand that, but I can, you know, intellectually understand it to some degree. That person is officially liberated. They're like the person in the water, and they've just lifted their head enough that they're no longer drowning in the ocean. So then, you know, they might pull that person in. He's hanging on to the life buoy, and you've got to hang on. You know? It's not that if you don't hang on to that life buoy, they're just going to pull up the life buoy and it'll be empty. You know, when the lifeline is thrown, you've got to hang on for all your might, and you know they will certainly help you, and they might, you know, drop you onto the deck of the ship, and you know you're lying there and practically, you know, unconscious, you're delirious, you've got no energy, but you're on the ship. So you know, that person's position is, you know, they're safe. They're completely, you know, plucked out of a very dangerous situation. That person who was going to, you know, just in the ocean of birth and death for millions and millions and millions of lifetimes, that stops. As soon as someone becomes properly associated with ISKCON, they're actually on that ship. Sometimes we see it. People come to ISKCON and they're, you know, they have no real idea of how to be a devotee. They're very bewildered by the modes of material nature. They do very foolish things. They have no real understanding of the philosophy, you know, just the tiniest little gut feeling about, you know, that yes, this seems to be the right thing. That person is like the person, they're on the ship. That's all that matters. They may be in some delirious situation. They can't do any service. You ask them to do some service, they struggle to do anything. They can't sweep the floor. They can't cut a carrot. You know, but it doesn't matter. That person is on the ship. They're saved. It's a fact. When I was on the farm, there was a boy there. He was about 40 years old. I said to him, "Can you mop this floor?" It was the old kitchen, because it was pretty dirty. It was the old farmhouse. I said, "Can you mop this floor?" I said, I'll show you how to do it. "I don't know, show me how to do that. I don't have a mop a floor." At this, he got angry, really angry at me. And I went away, and I come back an hour later. He's standing outside. He's got this look on his face. "Oh, yeah, here comes Gungi, you know." And I look at the floor. He's done about a quarter of it. You didn't mop the floor. "You can't mop that floor. Have a look at it." Yeah. I said, "Well, I'll show you how to do it." And he got angry. "Oh, you show me how to mop a floor." I said, "No, you get some, you know, what you do is when the floor's really dirty, like a, you know, kitchen floor, perhaps been left for a couple of days, you know, because it was the old farmhouse, we didn't use it. You just put plenty of water on it. Just throw plenty of water on it. Leave it for 5 minutes. The water soaks in and everything, you know, just it just lifts off. If you use a mop and just try to push it, you know, just try to, you know, scrub it, you know, you wear yourself out in about 10 minutes, especially, you know, it's covered. You put water there and you just, for 5 minutes, and it just, then you just touch it and it all just comes off. You know, and then you just take it all off, and then you just put more water on, and then you just clean it." I showed him, and he was really angry. But the fact is that in Kali Yuga, you know, we, because I'm not, you know, saying that I'm so expert a devotee, because I can mop a floor. It is one of my best qualifications, but still, you know, when we come to Krishna consciousness. I remember as a young devotee, you know, I look back and, you know, I'm glad none of you know me from being a devotee back then, because you can't remember all the stupid things I did. But, you know, we have very, very little qualification even to do simple tasks. But still, the fact is, you know, we're on the ship. So we're not like a deckhand, we're not, you know, the captain's best buddy, we're none of that, although we may have that going on in our heads, you know, that people come along and, you know, all of a sudden they're best friends with, you know, all the, you know, the big devotees. They feel like that, or they, you know, within, you know, they pick up a couple of things, you know, and they learn a couple of slokas, or they, you know, do something, all of a sudden they can feel that they're, you know, very, very advanced devotees, you know, very, very quickly, you know, because that's to be expected in a lot of cases, because people that come to ISKCON are coming from the modes of material nature. They're in the modes of passion, they're in the modes of ignorance, they've got all sorts of crazy stuff going on in their heads. I was giving, Prabhupada gives the example that when you're actually in a doctor who's treating mental patients, he doesn't become angry, you know, or disturbed by the, you know, his patients. They do all sorts of crazy things. They say so many silly things and that. But, you know, the doctor's just like, yeah, you know, that's all right. And the doctor just patiently just keep talking sense to them, you know, and they know that if you just keep talking sense to them, something, you know, to ground them, eventually they stop saying all these stupid things and they stop behaving in certain ways. And sometimes, you know, it's like that. Sometimes people come to devotional service, and all of us, many of us anyway, unless we've been trained up in previous life. So, but actually, you know, those persons gradually, you know, as they're travelling along on the ship, You know, they start to see how things are done. They see what the crew of the ship is doing. And they do get to meet the captain. And they understand, oh, you know, this captain is running a really good ship. And that's what Prabhupada first met his spiritual master. That was his impression. When, I think it was Narendra, his friend asked him, so now you've met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, so what is your impression? And Srila Prabhupada said, oh, you know, Lord Chaitanya's movement is in the hands of a very expert devotee. Now it will be spread. He understood. The captain of the ship, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada understood. Such a captain, there is no doubt Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement would be spread. And that was his impression. So, similarly, you know, people come to this ISKCON, and, you know, as devotees, you know, none of us can claim to be, you know, Nitya Siddhas. I don't know, maybe there may be some hidden Nitya Siddhas amongst us. We have to be a little careful, we don't know. Hands up, anyone thinks that might be? No. But, you know, there are many devotees. Sometimes we don't immediately get along with everyone. Sometimes it takes a while to get along with others. Sometimes we, you know, because we've been influenced by the most mature nature, sometimes devotees rub each other the wrong way and do the, you know, what have you. But, you know, sometimes we see faults and people look at ISKCON and they may see it from a materialistic point of view and think, you know, that they don't even believe in God and, you know, they don't understand, or they may have some vague idea or what have you. But when they hear about Prabhupada, they understand, oh, okay, you know, then I'm safe in ISKCON. You know, Prabhupada is, you know, oh, they have this captain of the ship, that should have Prabhupada. Oh, then I'm in good hands. And if Prabhupada is here, there is, you know, yes, I can guarantee that whatever problems I have, I've come to the right place. You know, and if I want to become elevated in spiritual consciousness, I just from seeing Prabhupada, hearing the devotees talk about him, yes, I can understand. This is the place, you know. So this is what the sages were feeling. That you know, they could see in Sudha Goswami, you know, there's so many difficulties. Is it even going to be possible to perform this 1,000-year, you know, sacrifice? And of all the different, you know, there's so many difficulties in the age of Kali, people are not interested. And, you know, in what way will we, you know, best save humanity? By hearing from Sudha Goswami, they understand, ah, now we have this, you know, captain of the ship, then we are, you know, certain that we are feeling very, very fortunate indeed. So, this is being described here. So, just to of course, even from one's most, the slightest understanding of the position of Srila Prabhupada, and the slightest association one may have with Srila Prabhupada through his books, you know, seeing the wonderful temples that he's established, seeing the wonderful deities, you know, and the deity worship, and, you know, seeing the quality of Srila Prabhupada's followers, you know, that despite all their faults, they're just such sincere people. You know, it's very rare to find sincere people in Kali Yuga. Everyone is insincere. Everyone is a rascal, and they're mad. They're mad rascals. You know, you come to a Hare Krishna temple, everyone is sincere. There's so many, they may, you know, have individually, you know, you may be looking and think, well, there's, you know, not such particularly wonderful qualifications, but the person is so sincere. You know, this person is definitely going to achieve success. And it is a mark of, you know, it is very rare to find in this age of Kali. And that you know, the people take shelter of Srila Prabhupada and they become really nice, you know, good quality people. So, you know, people have some, you know, and they're happy. They're dancing, they're feasting, and, you know, their lives are wonderful. So people can understand, you know, something about Srila Prabhupada, even from a brief encounter with this con, with Prabhupada's movement. Just like Jayananda Prabhu. You know, Jayananda Prabhu, he was the temple president temple, San Francisco. You know, but he would, you know, go and put out the rubbish and, you know, tidy the rubbish area and, you know, go to the markets and, you know, get the food at the cheapest price but the best quality, you know, for Krishna. And, but, you know, an eye for a bargain. But people met him, and from that one person, they just appreciated the whole movement. You know, from meeting that. And from that, they appreciated his spiritual master, Prabhupada. But actually, it takes many, many years for people to fully appreciate Srila Prabhupada. It takes a lifetime. In fact, it describes in the scriptures that actually, even if one is the most erudite scholar, very, very qualified person, they cannot understand the position and, you know, the heart of a pure devotee of the Lord. That's so elevated, you cannot understand. What makes it more difficult is that Krishna hides the glories of his devotees. We were discussing this yesterday, that Krishna hides his own glories. That we were describing how there are two reasons why Krishna acts like an apparently like an ordinary human being. Because for the materialists who want to believe that he's an ordinary human being, then literally he acts in that way so as not to disturb their determination to forget about God and to not serve God. He doesn't actually interfere with their free will. They are so determined to be atheistic and materialistic that he doesn't disturb them. That he, you know, to them. So they, you know, therefore they see him as an ordinary human being. But with the same actions that Krishna is acting as an ordinary human being, he's also increasing the loving reciprocation and loving mood with his prema bhaktis, his pure devotees. We discussed the example that Vasudev, out of his transcendental emotion of fearfulness and devaki, they, you know, because six sons had been killed, and just the thought that something would happen to Krishna, even though they understood that he was God, it caused them a lot of anxiety, and so they just wanted to be put out of that anxiety, you know. They just couldn't bear to think, you know, like that something would happen. So Krishna understood that, and they wanted to, you know, Vasudeva wanted to protect him somehow. Devaki wanted to protect him somehow, to hide him. So Krishna said to Vasudeva, okay, you hide me in Gokul. You carry me away, you take me there, and I will, you know, be safe there. And so Vasudeva carried him across the Jamuna and placed him in the care of Nanda and Yashoda. So Krishna didn't disturb that love which Vasudev had for Krishna. He allowed Vasudev to express his love, that of, you know, protection and care and extreme attachment. You know, when someone is extremely attached to something, the thought that anything may happen to that object of attachment is just, even if it is an irrational thought, it's like, no, that can never happen. But they're so attached that even an irrational thought, they just can't get it out of their head. It disturbs their whole, psychophysical makeup. So, Vasudev, Krishna, Krishna enjoyed that attachment. You know, he enjoyed, you love me so much, even though it's irrational. You know, I'm astonished, you know, you're thinking like that. You're astonished that you're even thinking like that. But still, you know, that you love me so much, I'm not going to disturb that. And therefore, yes, you please make me safe, take me. But just to see the extent of Vasudeva's attachment when Krishna was carrying him, Krishna fell into the river. He wanted to see, well, what is the extent of it? You know, Vasudeva practically went mad. Oh, Krishna's fallen into the water, and he just frantically, you know, tried to, you know, find Krishna and gather him up. So, you know, Krishna was seeing like that. He was testing, and Krishna was enjoying. Oh, you know, he just become mad. We see that with Srimati Radharani. You know, Krishna. In essence, actually, Krishna was watching Radharani. Radharani, when she was separated from Krishna, as she was talking to a bumblebee. But, you know, actually, Krishna was watching. He was thinking, such love she has. He was enjoying that love in one sense, you know, that Radharani loves me so. He was experiencing it. So, but. You know, Krishna could have said, you know, rather than enjoy that love of his devotees, he could have said, look, Vasudev, slap him around the face, cut a bit, snap out of it, I'm God. You know, you don't have to do that, you know. Yeah. He could have preached to him, you know, something from Bhagavad Gita. And we were given the example also yesterday that a father that they or a mother, they play, wrestle with a child, and in wrestling with the child, the child becomes the victor, the winner, and gradually subdues the father, and you know the father ends up going down on the ground, and the child, you know, sits on top of him, and you know, lets out his victorious cry, "Yeah, I beat you!" Like this. The father enjoys that. He enjoys that because he is enjoying a loving, transaction. With the child. The child is enjoying being with the father or the mother, you know. The children love that, you know, just, you know, my dad's the best, my mother's the best, you know. And the father's enjoying that. You know. he enjoys that more than the father displaying his own strength. Oh, you little child, how dare you think that you can defeat me, you know. Just see how strong I am. Now I'll get you, you little rascal, and beat you to a pulp. You know, that's bad. But, you know, there are some people who like that. When people are envious, in other words, to the degree that they don't have love, And this is where sometimes you see that amongst neophyte devotees. Neophyte devotees sometimes compete with each other. Because as we said, they're coming from a materialistic background, and sometimes what they try and do, because, you know, they're maybe in an ashram or, you know, somehow joined at the same time, and someone wants to display their superiority over the other. And there's there's a very, very intense competition. I remember when I was a brahmachari, it was like, it was just madness, you know. Who's going to be the first one in the temple room for Mangalarti? Because it was like that. If you were 5 minutes late, it's like, okay, you know, here comes Ganga. And they'll let you know about it all day. Oh, so, yeah, what happened this morning, Ganga? Hey, 5 minutes later, yeah, alright. Yeah. I'm not telling a lie. I never tell lies. One devotee, one time, yeah, we used to have a 30-second shower, fly down those stairs, you know, as you're running down, you sort of, you know, you're trying to work out with your toothbrushes, this, that, and the other. I saw one devotee dip his toothbrush into the pond, the fish pond, brush his teeth, so he'd done his teeth before, you know, so he got into the shower first. I'm telling you, it happened. The competition was so fierce, you know. So, you know, that, but when there's love, you know, so then you see as devotees become free from the material, contamination, then even though devotees actually very qualified in many different ways, when new devotees come, or even with their peers and their godbrothers, they always like to make them, they want everyone to see their wonderful qualities, and they sort of hide their own qualities, and they want others, look what this devotee has done. This devotee has done something so nice. So this is, you know, the quality when that love, you know, and compassion is there. So in the same way, the father, or in any relationship, when there's love, you know, the person wants to always, the person they love, to be, you know, glorified and always seen by others in a wonderful way. And even if there's, you know, many, many different faults, sometimes you see, you know, some parents, they may have children, and sometimes the son, you know, may be full of so many faults. But you try and tell that to the mother. You know, that they can't see it. Oh, no. You know, they may see faults in other, you know, but they can't see a fault in their own son. Oh, he's beautiful, you know, he's done this and he's done that. You know, they just see, because the love is there. Anyone else who doesn't have that, you know, extreme attachment and love, they're just thinking, what is this person doing, you know, like this. So, similarly, Krishna actually, he has this relationship with his devotees that he enjoys immensely their natural flow of love. And even with Patana, you know, we see that Patana, she came, you know, so much so in Krishna, how he just enjoys, any display of, loving sentiment, attachment, affection, service to Krishna. Patana came to kill Krishna, and Krishna accepted, but she's given me breast milk like a mother, and she treated me like her own child. He didn't even consider, he didn't take the bad side. He just took the good side. And he gave a liberation, and yes, you will go to Goloka Vrindavan. You can imagine how Krishna is so affectionate to his devotees. That's why, you know, even with new devotees, we should still be very, very careful how we treat even new devotees. Sometimes, because of our conditioning, we have a tendency to be a little rough with people who are in a bad mood. And we know that, okay, I better not do that to some of the senior devotees. I better not be rough with some of the senior devotees, but I've got this tendency, so I'll just take it out on, you know, here's a new bhakta, a bhaktin. You know, they're not very important. We'll just, you know, unload on them. You have to be very, very careful because, you know, Krishna taking and the little children, you know, come to Krishna consciousness. You know, Krishna is very, very appreciative of the slightest little show of Krishna consciousness, and we have to be, what to speak of those whose hearts are overflooding with pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such as Śrīla Prabhupāda. So Krishna sometimes hides his own good qualities in order to maintain love and of course to bewilder the atheist. But Krishna also, he hides the qualities of his pure devotees as well. That he allows them also to sometimes appear to be somewhat ordinary. Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji explained this point very nicely, that someone questioned, you know, if the, you know, if one can be saved by accepting, you know, the captain of the ship of the message of Godhead, why does Krishna then hide the glories of his devotees? And Guru Kishore, you know, because many people see them as ordinary people, then Guru Kishore Das Babaji said that Krishna, you know, he loves his devotees. You know, what to speak of the Prema Bhaktis in the, you know, Vrindavan mood, who love Krishna, not because he's God. So the Brajavasi mood, you know, they're not serving or loving Krishna because he's God. They're just serving him just because they love him. They don't care, you know, whether he's God or not. It is pure, it's called Kevala, a pure level of love. So those devotees, you know, Krishna hides their glories. Therefore sometimes he doesn't mention their names in the Bhagavatam, and when he speaks of them in the Bhagavatam, he sometimes speaks of them as if they're conditioned souls. Oh, you know, he said to Vasudeva and Devaki, you'll go back to Godhead in this lifetime. Vasudeva and Devaki are Nitya Siddha devotees. So, you could, Guru Kishore Das Babaji said that if someone renders even the slightest service to my pure devotees, I become obliged to that person eternally. That if someone does something for a devotee like Srila Prabhupada, offers a little service, and Krishna becomes pleased, Krishna becomes obliged to that person. And Krishna, he's you know, very intelligent. He doesn't want to be obliged to rascals and fools. So he will actually test people to some degree or another. And when he sees that there's some sincerity, he allows them to then understand the real position of Srila Prabhupada, or, you know, his pure devotees. So, actually, the position of Srila Prabhupada is that he has, an extremely confidential, you know, friendly, loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, his relationship is extremely confidential, very, very pleasurable for the Supreme Lord, and very friendly, very loving, you know, of the highest caliber. Therefore, you know, sometimes we see that some, you know, foolish people, even they may be very advanced sannyasis and scholars and so-called, you know, I see that there are a lot of paintings come out that, you know, people are doing about the various Rasa Leela, they're showing Radharani and Krishna and, you know, so many different paintings of the... But I know that, you know, one senior person who oversees many of those paintings, so for the fact that they're advertising, that they're absorbed in these, you know, close, confidential understanding of Krishna, and yet those persons criticize Prabhupada. And then you have to wonder, you know, well, hang on, you're claiming to have this understanding of Rasa Leela and this, that and the other, that you know so Krishna confidentially, you're so, you know, expert in Krishna and Radharani's pastimes, and yet knowing that Krishna is, you know, finds Srila Prabhupada so dear to him, you would find fault in Prabhupada? It's a thing. Sometimes we see in Srila Prabhupada's writings that, you know, his use of English, you know, was faulty. Sometimes he'd get names mixed up. He'd sometimes say, you know, Sanatan Goswami's and Rupa Goswami's names before they were initiated, you know, by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he'd mix them up. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada, he'd be speaking and just, you know, he'd make mistakes, you know, just little mistakes. And people may see that, oh, I thought he was perfect. But although we, in our conditioned state, may see some imperfection in Srila Prabhupada, which may or may not be there, Krishna, who loves Srila Prabhupada so dearly, it's not considered at all. There's no fault there. What Krishna is concerned with is that he wants his devotees to be glorified, and that is very pleasing to Krishna. So in the same way, sometimes we see that, for instance, Srila Prabhupada was very, very expert in, you know, in speaking Srimad Bhagavatam and, you know, in all aspects of devotional service. But when he was preaching, he would, you know, even at a big, big event, he would call up one of his disciples and he would say, oh, you know, I want such and such to speak. And, you know, if you listen to the different lectures, you know, sometimes they said, you know, things which, you know, they were obviously very sincere, so Krishna inspired them. But certainly, sometimes they got themselves in a little bit of trouble with, you know, an antagonistic crowd and what have you. But Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't seeing, you know, any faults. He was seeing that he was so pleased with what they were doing that, you know, whatever deficiencies that they had, you know, were not important. He was taking more pleasure from his disciples speaking somewhat, you know, in a haphazard way, an inexperienced way of the Srimad Bhagavatam, than his own pleasure in speaking Srimad Bhagavatam very expert. He's taking a huge pleasure in seeing his disciples, you know, like that. You see, you know, parents also with children, that, you know, although the parent may be very, very expert, and they may teach the children something, And then when the children, you know, does that in front of other people, then the parent, even though it is so much inferior to the parent derives unlimited pleasure from that inferior performance than their own more superior performance. So we see that, again, when Srila Prabhupada came to the West, he used to do kirtan. Srila Prabhupada, he understood the secret of success, that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati is so dear to Krishna that if Prabhupada just takes shelter of his instructions, then Krishna would immediately, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, the core, is so dear to Krishna, then if you become dear to Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, the core, you become extremely dear to Krishna despite any other qualification or disqualification you have. See? So Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, the core, he asked Prabhupada, you just go to the West and you preach. Prabhupada came to the West practically empty-handed. He sat in Tompkins Square Park with one pair of cartels. I think he had, you know, there was a some sort of a bongo drum, and he just chanted his heart out because he was trying to please the order of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. But we see that some kirtaniyas, oh, they're very, very, you know, very experts, with madanga, cartels, kirtan, you know, and they may have a whole orchestra behind them or what have you, because these days, you know, we're very fortunate in that sense that you can get so many different CDs with people who are very, very experts, you know, in there, and they have beautiful voices. You know, Prabhupada's voice, very wonderful, but, you know, he was 70 years old, and you know, you don't have the same sweet voice that you do when you're, you know, a 20-year-old. I said to my spiritual master when he came here a couple of years ago that I can get someone to do some recording. He said, well, it's been many years since I've done that, you know. He understood, you know, voice, you know, let's leave it to the younger ones. But Krishna heard the sweet singing of Prabhupada, which was filled with love and for both for Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati and for Srila Prabhupada. He heard that as the sweetest kirtan that, you know, you could ever hear. In the same way, if, you know, a parent hears their little children singing, and the children, they go out of tune, they forget the words. You know, you get little children, you try and get them to chant Hare Krishna. And sometimes they don't get the whole mantra right. You know, they're out of tune. They can't. They play the cartels, and the parent is in ecstasy. You know, that is so. That sound is so sweet to, you know, a Krishna conscious parent, compared to someone who may have, you know, the expertise of musical talent and, you know, such, you know, orchestrated, you know, musical backing. So Srila Prabhupada, Krishna actually appreciated Srila Prabhupada's kirtans. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada's kirtans are very, very purifying. Srila Prabhupada's books. People may be able to give classes and speak so much so-called higher philosophy and talk about so much rasa that Prabhupada never discussed. Yes. The difference is Krishna hears the Srila Prabhupada's purports in the Bhagavatam, that here is my devotee, just out of complete sincerity and love, just like Vasudev carrying Krishna across the ocean, Prabhupada has carried the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Krishna consciousness movement, across the ocean to the Western world, And Krishna is seeing Srila Prabhupada just like Vasudeva, just like Krishna saw Vasudeva. He didn't want to disturb his love, and he was enjoying immensely that loving mood of Srila Prabhupada. So therefore, if someone reads Srila Prabhupada's books, even if they're, you read them and you think, gee, it's simple philosophy, it doesn't matter. Krishna becomes so pleased. These books are so potent. You read Srila Prabhupada's books, and even he's not discussing the higher levels, so-called higher levels of Rasa and Krishna Leela, but you will get that realization. Therefore, we sing that prayer every morning. Prema Bhakti Jaha Hoiti. From him, ecstatic prema emanates. Krishna prema doesn't emanate from us, ransacking the, very elevated Govinda Leelamrita, and trying to enter in, poke our nose into Krishna's Rasa Leela. Krishna prema doesn't come from that activity. Krishna prema doesn't come from us attaining some huge position. Krishna prema doesn't come from us manifesting our expertise in any particular way within it, as a devotee. That will not produce Krishna prema. But if a devotee sincerely connects, tries to please Srila Prabhupada, that person will attain Krishna prema by Krishna's grace. Even though their activity, they may be making garlands, maybe cleaning the toilets, cutting vegetables, devotees that no one even notices. And sometimes people think, this one, this devotee and that devotee, they're always doing the big events and what have you. Not necessarily. We've actually seen that Krishna showed Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakura's movement was full of exalted sannyasis. He had an army of sannyasis and brahmacharis. But amongst them, this humble devotee who just wanted to sincerely please Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and that was his only qualification. Krishna allowed him to do more than what Lord Chaitanya or Krishna did himself. Just like a parent enjoys and helps the child to do so much more than the parent does, and parent takes great pleasure. So Krishna empowered because that qualification that he just sincerely and humbly wanted to please Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, who is so dear to Krishna. From that comes Krishna prema. That Krishna prema was manifest. Prabhupada saw Krishna everywhere at all times. That is, the symptom. Prabhupada never wanted to serve Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati for some, high position or some adoration. And therefore he never ever displayed wonderful situation that he had attained in the course of serving Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. But out of love, he always wanted to glorify his devotee, his disciples. He always wanted to glorify Krishna. He always wanted to glorify the holy name. He wanted to glorify Srila Bhaktisiddhanta like this. So that sincerity. So therefore, there are many things that we actually learn from Srila Prabhupada. In fact, we learn everything, but one of the most important things actually, we can ever learn from Srila Prabhupada is actually how to make Krishna happy. And Srila Prabhupada showed us that That is done in the same way the Brajavasis make Krishna happy. And that is, it is just a sincere display of love, and just without any false pretenses, without any, you know, hidden motives, just trying to make Krishna happy. And Prabhupada knew the success formula, that you can make Krishna happy by pleasing those that Krishna loves, because Krishna wants to glorify, out of his love he wants to glorify his devotees. So if someone does that, then Krishna becomes very favored. This is the secret. We see that Janmashtami is a time you can make a huge spiritual advancement, because people come and they glorify Krishna. Oh Krishna, you are God, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you created all these material worlds, you manifested all the spiritual worlds, you are so merciful. Yes, that person has made immense progress in Krishna consciousness, but nothing, not even a fraction, compared to those people who come today and glorify Prabhupada. But that's the hidden secret. Then, you know, Krishna takes notice. Oh, you know, we come before Krishna, you know. Yes, my heart is filled with love for you, Krishna. I'm your devotee. I will be your devotee. I promise. From tomorrow, I'll give up all my terrible ways, and I will really become it. And you will see what a big devotee I am for you. Krishna is not easily tricked, and you know he's not particularly impressed. Actually, you know, as described here, you know, what are our qualifications? Actually, all of us have one qualification, is somehow or another we have somehow pleased Srila Prabhupada. Every other good quality we have, or every other ability we have in Krishna consciousness, came from that. So ultimately we have one qualification. And to the degree that we actually manifest that one qualification, to that degree, you know, even if we're disqualified in so many ways, you know, we can't sing. And I'm speaking about myself now. They got me to sing last night, and I thought they probably won't ask me to do that again. I can't sing. I can't dance. I'm not pretty. My legs are too thin. But if I can somehow learn that art that Srila Prabhupada had, is to just sincerely try to please Srila Prabhupada, who is so dear to Krishna, I know that that one qualification is enough to take me back to Godhead. And we should also be careful that that is the way that we actually measure a devotee's advancement in Krishna consciousness, not by their apparent expertise in other different ways, which can actually just be material, you know, qualifications according to their karmas from previous lifetimes. You know, we actually have to see devotees. How do we know? What is that sincerity to please Prabhupada? That they actually follow what he says. So Srila Prabhupada gave the simple formula. You get up early in the morning, you come to Mangaladi, you chant your rounds, you go to Srimad Bhagavatam class. You preach Krishna consciousness, especially books. You come home in the evening, and just to complete the ISKCON sandwich, then again, purification, some kirtan, associate with devotees, hear a little Krishna katha, have some prasad, like that. You do that. Don't try to become a big devotee Just try to become sincere. There was one devotee, his name was Subhananda actually. Subhananda wrote the, or compiled the book of, you know, the Harinam, was it, Namamrita. You know, we used to read in the morning all different quotes from Prabhupada's books about the holy name. He had a conversation with Srila Prabhupada. He went to Srila Prabhupada and he said to Prabhupada that, I would like to write a book on psychology based upon the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada looked, you know, looked around at his other disciples and, you know, he didn't seem to be very impressed. What do you know of Srimad Bhagavatam? So, according to the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam, everyone in Kali Yuga is mad. Oh, Prabhupada's eyes lighted up. Oh yes, he's understanding. So anyway, he questioned him like this. So Srila Prabhupada then still didn't answer his question in one sense. You know, was Prabhupada going, you know, so he asked Prabhupada, you know, should I write this book? You know, Prabhupada sort of, you know, yeah, okay. But he was not sure, you know, like, do you really want me to write this book, or are you sort of saying that because I really want to do this? Prabhupada just raised his hand and said, you're empowered. And he quoted this verse. Tisham sadhari yuktanam batitam pradipurvakam tadami vidyogam tam yinamam upayanti te. That if those are sincere, then Krishna will inspire them. I don't know that he ever wrote that book. He did write the Namamrita. I don't know if he ever wrote that book. But you know, what we take from that is Srila Prabhupada is saying, in essence, don't try to be an empowered devotee. You know, I am the big empowered preacher. I am the big empowered kirtan. I am the big empowered this. I am the big empowered that. So, be sincere. Just be sincere, and Krishna will instruct you within your heart how to do everything and how to go back to Godhead. That's, you know, that's what empowered means. But don't try to be empowered. Just try to be sincere. If you try to be empowered, there may be some, you know, profit, adoration, distinct to some personal. But if you're just trying to be sincere, that I just want to please Prabhupada, what Prabhupada asks us to do, I will do that. Even if I appear to have, you know, through my intelligence and what have you, I can find so many more, or, you know, we shouldn't do it this way. I don't know why Prabhupada, you know, we should do it this way. You know. So, if a person is very serious, very sincere, that to know, I want to find out the way Prabhupada liked things done. And I'm going to do it that way, and I'm going to help other people to do it that way. That's what pleases Prabhupada. Not any so-called big qualification or empowerment that we may think we have. And that's actually how we can see who's actually advanced or not. Because you don't know. You see someone cutting up potatoes out the back there, no one even thinks about them. And someone else is in the limelight and everyone, oh, such and such did such and one. And you can easily mistake who is actually the sincere devotee. But it's very easy to see, not because of the big position or the fancy things that they're doing, but because which devotee is just always trying to please Prabhupada sincerely. You know, you see that they have that Prabhupada. So you know, even though they're cutting the, you know, the potatoes, you, oh, go and see that devotee. You know, you want to know something, go, he cuts potatoes, But you know, you can sit and talk to him. You sit and talk to him while he's cutting potatoes, and you'll learn everything you know about Krishna, everything you need to know about Krishna consciousness. Okay. And people, you know, other sincere devotees are recognized. Okay. So, in this way, if we have a whole movement of sincere devotees, and whatever service they're doing, and similarly, you know, Srila Prabhupada was like that. He was practically unnoticed. You know, within his movement, he was, in fact, sometimes he was referred to in a slightly condescending way, you know, just, you know, that sort of grihasta, you know, like, you know, that conditioned soul, you know. he was not, it was only because Srila Bhakti Siddhanta immediately spotted the sincerity that other disciples accepted Prabhupada as being something to consider. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, whatever he writes, you print it. That's what he told them. Otherwise they may not have noticed. So in this way, we are very fortunate, taking the meaning of this verse, that we have found the captain of this ship, which is the boat with the message of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are very confident, because we have the captain of Srila Prabhupada, that this message of Lord Chaitanya will certainly be preached for 10,000 years minimum, and it will spread to every single town and village. You can guarantee that, because Srila Prabhupada is the captain of the ship. And whatever tiny little service that we can do to somehow please Krishna, no matter how insignificant it is, Krishna takes it as the most wonderful thing. And no matter how wonderful some other service is, which is not pleasing to Prabhupada, Krishna is not even interested. So don't bother. So, in this way, let us all take shelter of Srila Prabhupada today and pray that he gives that understanding how to be, you know, just a sincere follower, that whatever little service we can do for Srila Prabhupada, we accept that as the greatest benediction. So I'll leave it there if any devotees have any comments or questions.
Many Indians find it difficult to digest or accept that Prabhupada used to so heavily criticize anyone who is not a true devotee. So how do we understand Prabhupada's use of such words, and how do we react to people who express that?
How do we react to people who can't understand that Prabhupada was pressing that point so strongly and criticizing others strongly who were not on
that? Before that, how do we understand Prabhupada when he used such strong words?
Okay. Yeah. You look. Prabhupada, we can say Srila Prabhupada used strong words, but overall, if you take Srila Prabhupada's stance, you won't find a more soft-hearted, delicate approach than what Srila Prabhupada took with everybody, you know. And even, you know, even his you know, even his strong words and chastisements, you know, are quite mild, really. His guru, on the other hand, Bhakti Siddhanta, now he was heavy. They called him Simha Guru, the Lion Guru. Actually, when people would see Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakura walking down one side of the street, they would cross to the other. Out of fear, he would accost them.
"You rascal, my lad, are you preaching this nonsense?" And he would chop away at him, you know. Actually, he was so strong that even some of his disciples, Prabhupada mentioned, some of his own disciples found it hard to, tone it back a bit. He would chop, 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 chop. "You rascal, my lad, you rascal," and, you know, demigod worship, this, that, and the other. All of them. Very strong. Very, very strong. And his own disciples, you know, so Srila Prabhupada, you know, actually comparatively, you know, Srila Gaurika Shodas Babaji. You know, people would come and take shelter of Srila Gaurika Shodas Babaji, and he would see that they were insincere, and they would say, how can I serve you, Srila Gaurika Shodas Babaji? And he would say, "Give up your wife, your family, your job, and you stay with me here and you chant Hare Krishna." "Oh, how can I do that?" "Oh, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna." They would come with they would come with their ticket to Mayapur or Vrindavan. "I have come to the Holy Dharma to take shelter." "Oh, why do you have a return ticket? Why did you come with a return ticket? You come to take shelter. What sort of devotee are you?" You know, he was so disgusted with the state of people in Kali Yuga. He was so disgusted with them, and he felt that I cannot, you know, offer any benefit. I they are so fallen. I do not believe I can accept any disciples. I can't preach to them because they are so fallen. And he felt himself so fallen that, you know, there is nothing I can do except pray to Lord Chaitanya, "You please send someone who can preach to them." And that person was Srila Prabhupada. You know, even Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada asked him, you go to Australia and you oversee Australia. He said, "Prabhupada, I can't do that. I can't preach to Australians." It's too difficult. Such a mob we are. Send me anywhere else. Srila Prabhupada, you know, embraced people from all over the world and gave them his time, himself, it's so liberally. And he went through, you know, at such an elderly age, it was very, very difficult for him, and people caused him so much trouble. And, you know, just like Kamsa caused so much trouble and the demons to, you know, try to kill Krishna, and Vasudeva had to protect Krishna, you know, the modern day Kamsas and Agasuras, you know, and the Bakasuras, they came at ISKCON, you know, with their beaks open and, you know, they wanted to destroy ISKCON. You know, Srila Prabhupada fought tooth and nail, and while, you know, shouldering immense pressure of personally training thousands and thousands of disciples and travelling all over the world relentlessly just to give everyone the opportunity, you know. And then, what, you know, so many difficulties and, you know, sometimes devotees, you know, cooked a big feast and forgot to even give Prabhupada some. You know, in the early days, they couldn't even cook. Prabhupada was cooking for the devotees. You know, in the early days, Prabhupada was cooking and serving them. Yeah, there's no qualification at all. So you know, he was so there was a Mayavadi Dr. Misra, who's an impersonator. When he got sick, Prabhupada made him prasadam and took it and spoon fed him practically. Prabhupada was so kind, you know, you know, Krishna certainly sent the right person. You know, we have difficulty sometimes being friendly within our own family, you know. Even within our own ashram, you know, amongst friends, we have difficulty getting along. Srila Prabhupada just, you know, tolerated everything from anyone and just, you know, never complained about any personal discomfort and just openly embraced every single person and just fully gave them, you know, no matter what time of day, no matter what time of night, he just completely gave them every possible opportunity to somehow, you know, understand Krishna consciousness. You know, that sort of preaching is unheard, you know, apart from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you just don't see that. And even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he preached in India. You know, Prabhupada, you know, preached, you know, in the most uncivilized, you know, terrible, fearful places of the world. You know, he went to places where, you know, he said sometimes, you know, when he went to Russia and places like that, he was fearful for his life. He didn't know he'd ever come back. I'm going to Russia to preach. We may or may not see you again. You know, in those days, it's very, very dangerous. You know, they just sometimes just grab me off the street and they just lock me up, no one ever hears of you. So, you know, sometimes Srila Prabhupada would certainly, you know, use strong words, but that was also an expression of his love. You know, in the same way that even the kindest parent, and the most gentle, Prabhupada, his father was very lenient, and his mother was very strict and very hot and fiery. But even, you know, his father, you know, would sometimes have to allow strong measures. Just like Srila Prabhupada, when he was to go to kindergarten, he wouldn't go. And Prabhupada said to, you know, his mother, "Oh, I will not go." And then he went, ran to his father. You know, "I don't want to go. I do not want to go." And his mother, "He must go. He must go." And you know, a little boy said, "Oh, I'll go tomorrow." And he knew his father, and sort of, and his father said, "Oh, you know, he'll go tomorrow." And then tomorrow came, and Prabhupada, no, "I'm sick today." So he's just a little boy, "I'll go another day." And his mother said, no, you know, so she got really angry. So his father understood that some harsh measures, so he put a boy literally in the hands of the mother, the wife, and who put Srila Prabhupada in the hands of Damodar, who was hired to literally tie a rope around Srila Prabhupada's waist and to escort him so he couldn't run away, because that's what Prabhupada would do, he would run. And if he tried to run, and you know, if he didn't have the rope, Damodar would have to pick him up, and he would personally put him down in front of his teacher, like this. So, you know, even his father, who was extremely lenient with Prabhupada, you know, so lenient, you know, Prabhupada, when he was a few years old, he was walking past the shop, he saw a toy gun. "I want the gun, I want the gun." No, "You don't need it." Prabhupada cried, "Oh, I can't have the gun, you know. I have the gun." So he bought him the gun. "I want the other, I've got two hands, I want the other one." "You can't have two guns." Prabhupada rolled on the ground, kicked his legs up, screamed, "You know, I want two guns." So his father bought him two guns. So his father was like that, very, very, very lenient. But even so lenient, he understood for his own benefit, he must get an education. Therefore, he allowed some very harsh, you know, treatment as a last resort. So, you know, we should see that. We should see Prabhupada so compassionate, but as a last resort, you know, yes, he would be, you know, he wasn't going to let anyone, relegate Krishna to insignificance, nor Krishna's devotees. As a last resort, he would stand and he would fight. And although Srila Prabhupada wasn't very tall, when he was prepared to challenge, he was like 100 foot tall. People just backed away like that. So, you know, as a last resort. But, you know, we should, you know, people should see his life story, that, you know, so soft and compassionate, soft as a rose. Any other questions or comments? So I should have brought that. I think at 10:30 we begin our program with bhajans and readings from Srila Prabhupada's book.